Welcome to the March 2012 episode of The President's Perspective. It's a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. This is an opportunity for Dr. Jones to share information that he feels is important or interesting to KETR's radio audience here in Northeast Texas. Welcome, Dr. Jones.
Thanks, Jared. I'm glad to be here.
Today's show is set to include information about the value of higher education. We'll also have a brief chat with A&M Commerce music student bound for Carnegie Hall and a note about Commerce's Citizen of the Year. But first, we dive right in with the final installment of our ongoing discussion about the university's seven guiding principles, saving the best for last, and that's communication.
That's right, Jared. We've been taking our little guided tour of the guiding principles. It's been a leisurely journey and an enjoyable one, but we are down to the last one, which is communication. And communication we define, according to our guiding principles, as the mandate to develop a consistent, authentic, and reliable message that effectively conveys our commitment to extending opportunity, transforming lives, and shaping futures through education. And our guest on this segment is our own communications guru, Associate Vice President for Marketing Communications, Randy Jolly. Randy, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here. And, of course, communications is something that's your profession, that's your career, and that's what you do, among a number of other things, like, you know, cleaning up and making coffee, which we all do. But that obviously is consumes a big part of your day. When we talk about the importance of communication, what goes through your mind? Why include communication as one of the university's seven guiding principles?
Well, the primary thing is to interpret what you and what the rest of the university really wants to communicate. I mean, we all talk in different languages. The faculty talk in one language, you as an administrator, and the very different hats that you wear. You speak to different groups. We talk to each other inside the university. But one of the jobs of the communications area is to take all that input and all that conversation and shoehorn it, if you will, into a single message, into a message that promotes our brand, that adds value to our brand, and really adds texture to our brand. Mm-hmm. You know, so our job as communicators, we think, and hopefully, is very important because we take the central message that you lay out from the very top, from the 30,000-foot angle or altitude, and the various others, and then we interpret that message to the relevant audiences. You know, what we say to Hispanic families, for instance, and how they interpret our message is different than maybe first-time freshmen from some other cultures. Things have different meanings, and transfer students interpret things different ways. And so all of our different audiences are listening to what we're saying, but we have to be adept at communicating that in the different languages they understand.
Yeah, I think that's an important point because a lot of times when we talk about communication and messaging, we think that, well, that's just kind of like advertising. You know, okay, here's our message. Let's go buy a billboard and slap it up there, and you know, and that's communication. That can be part of it, but that's really only a very small part of it. And Randy, you use the term interpretation, which I think is so key to effective communication because it's not simply a matter of just passing along information. It has to do with shaping that information and synthesizing and consolidating it.
Right, and being authentic about it. I mean, you hit it on the head. I mean, people make claims and say things that none of us believe. I mean, when we see the car advertisements on TV, we don't believe they're selling it any cheaper than anybody else. And,
right.
And we don't believe a lot of these things. It's just it turns into noise that we don't pay attention to. So as communicators, how do we turn that message into something that's relevant and certainly interpreted in terms that you can understand, but how is it authentic? I mean, how is what we're saying truly authentic to the person that's looking for an education or to fill a hole in their life that we can fill? And so we take these things seriously. In our mission statement, we talk about authentic and we talk about reliable. Well, those are real words. Those aren't just marketing boilerplate. I mean, how do we say things that are authentic? You know, the single mom with the two kids that has a two-year certificate that needs a bachelor's degree to be able to get a promotion or to get the job she wants or whatever. How do we make our message so authentic that she sees that and goes, that's for me. I want to choose A&M Commerce as the place to go as opposed to the, any number of other opportunities that are in the area or really in the world now that we have online. So the authenticity of our message is critically important.
Yeah, and I think, again, that touches on another key point about messaging is that when we talk about communication, we talk about messaging, it's not like all of us over here on one side of the university sort of come up with a plan and then ship it over to marketing and communications and say, okay, you guys do your stuff now. When we talk about communication, we're talking about process as well as product.
Absolutely.
In shaping our message, it's a dynamic and evolving kind of a process. And And it may change over time.
It not only changes over time, but how we translate it changes over time. You know, maybe at this point in time, with the way the economy is, and with the schools having some difficulty, you know, with teachers being out of jobs, we translate our message of personal involvement in transforming lives one way. Maybe as the economy changes, or we address a different market group, we translate it a different way. I mean, the same message is there. I mean, the fact that we provide quality education and it's affordable, and it really prepares people for a career. It doesn't just prepare them for a job, but it prepares them for a career. All those things are authentic. It's just, how do we take what the professors are teaching and what the administrators are saying, what the enrollment people are doing, and how do we, like you say, how do we transform that over into a believable mm-hmm. and real message?
Right. You know, I think I'm reminded of what the poet W.H. Auden said when he was asked about the process of writing, and his observation was something along the lines of, how do I know what I think until I see what I've said?
Exactly.
You know, and when I think about communication in our setting, I think about that. We come up with a message, and in a way that doesn't just express our mission mm-hmm. and our values, but it helps shape and form our mission and our values.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that sort of typifies how we came up with our current message. You know, everybody has taglines, and we're not real big on taglines because they're so perishable, and what sounds good to you may not sound good to Jared or to any of the rest of us. But what is the message that we really have to say? And so we went out to the students, mm-hmm. and we went out to the professors, and we said, why did you select A&M Commerce? And almost, well, I would say every single person we talked to, instead of going into some giant rambling explanation of why A&M Commerce was so much better, they related a specific story.
Right.
They said, well, this professor paid attention to me, or this person, this recruiter, when I came in the door to sign up, they remembered my name, they remembered my mother and father's name, or I had a student that helped me through a class that had been through that class before. So what we began to pick up on real quickly was this authenticity of really caring about people.
Right.
You know, I come from the business world, and when you look at education initially, you think, well, math is math, science is science. I mean, it's all kind of the same thing. It's just how it's delivered at the different universities. Well, that's really not the case once you get into
right.
this university in particular, because there really is that private school feel to a public university. We really care. I mean, when you see it, the other day I was over in the one-stop shop where our new students come in, and the vice president of that area was talking to a family and encouraging them and assuring them that their daughter would be safe, that she would be taken care of, and that she would finish her degree. And that was from the vice presidential level all the way down to the staff level. You see that level of concern, and I think that's what drives our message. That's a great message to sell.
Right.
If I had a message to say, well, we've got a Division I football team that's won 11 out of 11 games and or whatever some of the big schools get to brag about.
Yeah, let's not talk about football.
Yeah, we won't talk about football. But the point is, our emphasis is really, you know, we use the terms transforming lives and it almost becomes boilerplate and it almost becomes meaningless until you see it in action.
Right.
And when you see it in action, it truly is one of those goosebump moments when you go, okay, that's what we do.
Exactly.
Well, as communicators, it's our job and our exciting job to be able to convey that into more than, like Jared said, more than just words, but into pictures, into feelings, and really into our brand.
When you talk about, too, the process behind that, it's not just that we're taking things and saying them to people, but there's a process being built in the background about how to take information and to filter it in such a way as that it lands with a particular audience. And then you see that sort of being applied to other departments inside the university, and you see that being applied from, you know, professor to student. We talked one time in recent history about academia moving away from the sage on the stage.
Right.
And communication can find its way in terms of a guiding principle into our tenets for trying to deliver content and education via, you know, mobile devices
right.
and things like that, and the process by which you parse that information and then deliver it directly to a person who is going to care about it. It really bridges the gap across every department. Everybody at the university has something to say to someone, and the method by which they do that, I think, is what we're talking about.
Right. And when we talk about communication being a guiding principle, we're talking about it on the big stage in that broad sense. It's not just the university communicating with its external constituents, but it's how do we communicate with one another
right.
in authentic and meaningful ways?
Mm-hmm.
And this takes us back to our very first guiding principle, the stewardship principle. And if you recall in that conversation several months ago, we talked about the stewardship of discourse. And that's really, that's a key tenet in terms of the way we message and the way we communicate. We have to be mindful of language because when we are mindful of language, we're mindful of one another.
Right. I guess that's the thing, making sure that your message lands. I mean, people, they hear plenty of things, but what they understand is significantly less, I think.
And yeah.
So, as long as it's meaningful whenever it lands on whoever you're throwing it at.
Right.
That is going to tie up our discussion about the guiding principles, and of course, we'd be happy to sort of get all those things into one place so folks can go and pick through them as mm-hmm. they will and learn a little bit about all of the seven guiding principles that are essentially behind the motivations of everyone who works here and essentially everyone who learns here.
Right.
You know, it affects everyone at the university, and so great, too, that we've reached the end of that and that we can
yeah.
we can discuss more things now and in the future. But shifting gears a little, you recently had an opportunity to respond to a question that is appearing now at the heart of our industry in higher education.
That's right, Jared. I was on a panel in Dallas a few days ago, and it was a panel. We were addressing a group of business leaders and civic leaders, and it was a fairly general topic. It had to do with education and the importance of education, investing in education, and so forth. Well, during the Q&A period, one of the members of the audience said, "How would you define value in higher education?" Now, at first blush, that's the kind of question which can elicit a fairly blithe response, you know, and you talk about how important education is to the future. And, you know, you can say a lot of things that are true but fairly meaningless.
Right.
But as I explored that and other members of the panel explored it, I realized this really is a fairly profound question. And it's a question which the citizens of the state of Texas and of the United States of America, I think, deserve an answer. And as we discussed this among ourselves on the panel and then with the members of the audience, we came up with, I think, some pretty interesting insights. One is, in terms of value, the quickest and perhaps most obvious answer is that the value of a college degree can translate directly in terms of employability, right? You get a college degree, you're more likely to get a job, you're more likely to make more money because you've got that degree. But I have to quote one of my fellow panelists, Michael Sorrell, who was the president of Paul Quinn College. And he said, "Yeah, you know, we used to say that all the time. You know, if you have a high school degree, you're going to earn $1.3 million over a lifetime, and if you get a college degree, you're going to earn $2.7 million." He goes, "That doesn't work with our students. They see those numbers and think, well, hey, either way, I'm going to be a millionaire."
Sure, sure, yeah, that's what it sounds like.
So you got to drill a little deeper when you're talking about real value in higher education. So obviously, employability, obviously, earning power, those are value.
Sure.
Equations there. But let's talk about another kind of value you get from higher education. And this has to do with, I guess, what I would call personal efficacy or power to control your own destiny. Partly that comes from economic power. Again, no arguing that. But it also comes from the ability to see opportunity more clearly and with a more discerning eye. So when you come out of here, A&M Commerce or any great institution of higher learning, yeah, you've learned some skills. You can be an accountant. You may be on your way to becoming a doctor or a lawyer. You know, you've learned skills that you can use in the workplace. But you have also learned something about who you are, what you can do, and what opportunities are out there
right.
available to you. I want to tell you a quick story to kind of illustrate the point. Joe Hinton, one of our very successful alums and one of our great supporters. He's never forgotten his alma mater. And one of his particular interests is in international education. He really likes giving young people the opportunity to go abroad and travel. And anyone who's traveled abroad can tell you that it is a transforming experience because you just see things you could never have imagined. You can read about the pyramids in a book. You can see pictures of them in National Geographic. But until you're standing there in the burial chamber in the Great Pyramid, you haven't really experienced it. Anyway, so he funds a scholarship and sends a number of students abroad every year. And a few years ago, one young lady came back and wrote Mr. Hinton a thank you note. And in her thank you note, she said that, I think she was from Cooper, she was from one of these towns here, you know, in our region. She said that after her study abroad experience, she came back, took a look at her boyfriend and said, "I can do better than that."
When your eyes have been opened, then exactly. You're going to have that. Yeah.
Well, again, that's kind of a quaint and humorous story, but you think about what a college education does for you, that's exactly what it does.
Sure.
It teaches you to set your sights higher.
Right. I kind of equate that to a feeling of helplessness that you no longer have. You know what I mean? And it's on a plane that's different from emotional helplessness and so forth, but it's this feeling that even when things kind of go awry, you know, when the economy tanks or whatever, that you can still kind of find the answer and you can still kind of do something that will get you through, and you don't feel like that all hope is lost. And I'm not saying that, you know, education necessarily does that for everybody, but I know that happened for me.
Well, it teaches you to look at the world creatively and to spot opportunities that perhaps, if not for this growth experience that you had through your college life, if not for that, you just may not have seen those things.
Right. Right, the creativity that can sometimes lead to creation of an industry like we've seen before. And higher education is not a prerequisite necessarily, but it certainly puts you down the road a little bit.
Right, right. Well, I think about my ancestors. You know, and I've told this story before. My father was the first in his family to attend college, and the way that opened up doors of opportunity for his children, my brother and me. Mm-hmm. Well, you go back a few generations in my family, and, you know, they were honest, noble, hardworking people, but the paths that were open to them were limited, and they were limited in part by their own limited vision. You know, they didn't see the opportunity that perhaps my father saw and took advantage of. And again, it can be the kind of thing that utterly changes the course of history for a family.
I think it's difficult to place a price on that. When you talk about value, the value goes beyond anything that you can really measure.
Exactly. And that's when we talk about value in higher education, sometimes we fall into the trap of defining that value in strictly monetary terms.
Right.
Or we talk about it in terms of efficiency or productivity. Well, those are sort of economic indicators, but they are not true measures of value. It's not how many people do we graduate. That's important.
Right.
We need to be serving people of our region and of our state. But let's talk about the quality and authenticity of the experience that we provide them while they're here. That's where the value lies.
I hope the lady got the answer that she was looking for.
Well, she didn't ask any follow-ups.
It's a good indicator, right. Yeah. Well, we got to say a very special thank you to our guest for this segment, Randy Jolly. He's the Associate Vice President for Marketing Communications at Texas A&M University Commerce.
It was great to be here. Appreciate it.
When we come back, we'll talk with music student Chris Ramos about an opportunity of a lifetime. This is The President's Perspective, only on your station, 88.9 KETR.
KETR is supported by Greenville Sleep Center, specializing in the diagnosis and treatment of sleep apnea. Risks associated with sleep apnea include high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, and obesity. More information from Sleep Therapy Associates at 866-529-7828 and stat-management.net.
When severe weather strikes, tune it here. 88.9 KETR.
National Weather Service meteorologists detected a developing tornado 4 miles southwest.
These storms now have knocked over 68,000 people out of power.
This has shown a lot of indications of some large hail and damaging winds.
We're having one terrific storm, electricity's out, something just bammed up against the side of my house.
This storm has organized itself in a line that stretches all the way up through Lamar.
For your source for severe weather coverage, 88.9 KETR.
Welcome back to The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the CEO of TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. I'd like to throw back the curtain for just a minute, if I can, in order to help this next segment make sense. We were in the studio a few weeks ago recording this program, and at that time, the event that we're about to discuss has not yet happened, so now you're with us in this point in time. But we are very much looking forward to this event that we're talking about.
Well, thanks, Jared, and thank you for locating us in the temporal universe.
Yeah, in the
timeline. Well, the event we're talking about, of course, is a trip by our students in the music department, specifically the Chorale and Wind Ensemble, who will be going to Carnegie Hall to perform in New York City on February the 28th. And this is such an incredible opportunity for these students, as well as the entire university, just to showcase the great talent that we have here. And we're going to have some of our alumni are going to be actually going there, alumni from across the country, And, of course, we have a fair amount of alumni right there in New York whom we've invited as well. So it's a tremendous opportunity and really a once-in-a-lifetime event. And our guest on this segment is Chris Ramos, who is a music major, although not just music, right? Chris, you're double majoring, aren't you?
No, I'm actually just majoring in music.
Just majoring in music.
I have multiple instruments.
Multiple instruments. Yeah. Well, maybe that's what I was thinking of. Before we start talking about the event, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you came to A&M Commerce.
Well, I'm from Salina, Texas, a little bitty town just north of Frisco. And I applied here for the Honors Scholarship, and I got the Honors College Scholarship. And I got a similar scholarship to another university, but it was... The Wind Ensemble actually did a performance at the Eisman Center. We used to do the evening at
Eisman. That's right, right. And actually, that's where I met you initially. I don't know if you remember.
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah.
And so my mom and I went to that, and I was just blown away. I was blown away in the figurative and literal sense of the word. And I, that's when I decided I was going to come to school here.
Well, so. we're glad you made that decision, and I hope you are enjoying your academic journey to this point, and especially being in that fantastic new music building.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. What now? All right, one major but many instruments. So what instruments?
Well, just two, really. Piano is my main instrument, and horn was my main instrument for a long time, too. I did them both, but I've set horn kind of on a secondary level now.
Yeah, concentrating on piano.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, what do you think about going to Carnegie Hill?
Oh, it's just incredible, incredible in so many different ways. Of course, we have our ups and downs, you know, and that's anything worthwhile is going to be difficult.
Right.
So, but we're right in the thick of it right now, and we're pushing to get those last phrases learned and set and getting the way we want them done. But the music we're playing is just incredible, and I'm really excited to get to share that music with a lot of people.
Yeah.
But the whole experience, just going through with my fellow peers, and working on incredible pieces of music, and then having composers come in and talk about their music. We had James Seiler this past week, and we're having David Mislenka, one of the forefront composers in the nation. He's coming next week. And to get to do that and to just get to make incredible music with incredible musicians.
Right.
And then to take that to a place like New York City.
Right.
So it's really neat to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
The students are incredibly invested in this trip and this experience in so many levels that I've never quite invested myself, I don't think, in something as large or as intense as this.
Yeah. Well, it is an intense experience. And Jared, you can well imagine,
The most that I think I'd ever prepared for beyond, you know, radio programs on this station, might have been things in terms of music back when I was in high school, but I can't even fathom the amount of preparation and sort of the rigor of trying to prepare for something like Carnegie Hall.
Yeah. I mean, the directors really know what they're doing. The directors are very good at not just being great conductors and you know, outlining rehearsals and things like that, but they're just really good at understanding what needs to be done and how to do it well and execute well.
Right.
And so that's been helpful, taking a little bit of that pressure off, knowing that the directors are on target with what they're doing. And they really, we have been pushed a lot, but it's been good, you know. And Mr. Clemens ends nearly every rehearsal now with, I love you. I love you.
Yeah.
I know it's hard, but it's going to be hard, but that's what makes it worthwhile.
Well, you know the old joke about how do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Yes.
You know, practice.
Yeah,
so
of course.
that's what it takes. How long have you all been practicing for this particular concert?
Well, we've been on and off since the semester started last fall. We've been learning one piece for each concert that we had in the fall. So we learned the Mislenka piece early in the fall, and then we learned the next piece. We learned part of the Seiler piece for later in the year, and then we're learning the last piece this semester. And so we've been preparing for it for quite a while, but it's been paced really well. So we haven't just been shoving it all in
right
here at the last minute.
Right. Nervous?
Little bit, yeah. Nervous, but I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to make great art with my friends.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I think nerves are kind of a good thing.
Oh, sure.
You know,
oh,
when, yeah. when you got a big thing coming like up like this, I mean, it really kind of, as long as you're prepared, you know, and I think you all are going to be amply prepared.
Right.
But a little case of the nerves sometimes helps you perform at your very at your peak.
Yeah.
So while you're in New York, are you going to have time to do anything else, or is it pretty much just the concert?
I think so. We're going to have about a day and a half, 2 days,
uh-huh.
To kind of explore things on our own, and
yeah.
we have plans.
Good.
To do some good stuff around New York City.
Well, we won't talk about all of those plans
There's no need.
On the air.
I wonder if it, I hope not to add to your nervousness, but Dr. Jones, talk about the awareness that comes along with A&M Commerce Music Department having to do with Carnegie Hall.
Oh, it's incredible. You know, I mean, Carnegie Hall is obviously, you know, one of the premier performance venues, not just in America, but in the entire world. And the amount of visibility and recognition that's going to come to our university as a result of the performance of our students in that hallowed hall,
right?
It's going to be a whole new level for us. So again, no pressure, Chris.
Oh,
but,
sure.
None
taken.
But this is a place that, you know, professional musicians can spend their entire careers and never perform in.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the kind of an opportunity that is really meaningful.
Yeah, and I just hope that the performance we give our audience is just true and genuine to mm-hmm. what we believe about music and what we believe about art, even more than, I mean, yeah, we're performing in Carnegie Hall. That's really cool. But what's really cool is that we're getting to perform for that audience that's going to be there.
Right.
And that's what's going to be really, really neat about it.
Well, you know, and there'll obviously be some New Yorkers in the audience who are very discriminating and, you know, will certainly be listening with a very educated ear. But there's also going to be a lot of loyal alumni in the audience who really love this institution. I know I was talking with one of our alums who lives in Birmingham, Alabama. He's Frank Turner, who's a train guy. And he's going to ride the train up from Birmingham to New York.
It's quite a trip, I would think.
On the train, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But I know we have some folks here in Commerce who are making the trip, so.
Well, I think it's going to be an exciting time. I know it's silly to forward promote something that will have happened in the past by the time folks are listening to this, but KETR is planning a live from New York broadcast as well in association with this, and we will be talking to, we will have talked to music students and the directors and folks around the Carnegie Hall performance. And so I'll be right across the street. Was right across the street, and while you guys were getting ready to perform, and I'll be in the audience or was in the audience as well. So
great,
this is really exciting. And Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the
thank
program.
You.
Great, and break a leg or whatever the musical equivalent is.
Yeah. Oh, you will. Thank you.
Okay, Chris, thanks a lot.
Our guests today have been Associate Vice President for Marketing Communications, Randy Jolly, and Music Major Chris Ramos. And before we're done today, Dr. Jones, I understand that the Jones family. Now includes a Commerce, Texas Citizen of the Year.
Yes, and we are so proud, and Jelena, of course, is especially proud. She was the surprise honoree at last week's Chamber of, well, a few weeks ago,
yeah.
Again, before we come unstuck in time, at the recent Chamber of Commerce annual banquet. And a little birdie had told me ahead of time that she was going to be receiving this honor, but not her. So it was so funny when at the event itself, as they were introducing the Citizen of the Year and getting ready to name her, she was listening, and they said, well, this person is new to Commerce but has gotten involved on different boards and has really embraced the community. And Jelena leaned over to the person next to her at the table and says, how come I don't know this person? I mean, it sounds like somebody I ought to have met.
We're involved in the same stuff?
Yeah, right. But she was so thrilled and so honored, and just another indication of what a warm and welcoming community we live in.
Well, Dr. Jones, we thank you so much for joining us, and we'll have to do this again next month.
Let's do it.
All right. The March 2012 episode of The President's Perspective is in the books. You can hear this program on the first Wednesday of every month at noon and again at 5 p.m. Find audio online at thenewketr.org, or now subscribe to the iTunes podcast and take the program with you. KETR is listener-supported radio for Northeast Texas and is a free and universal broadcast service of Texas A&M University Commerce. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.